Hello, hello, and welcome to attempt number two. I think fucking goddamn it, this mic is not right. All right, there we go. That's a lot better. If you didn't hear me the first time, welcome to attempt number two of Steep Voice Practice. Now, really quickly, I want to say thank you for listening to this. You might not listen to it. Got a real Elvis thing going on, so you know it was really funny earlier. I learned this, like, tip of, like, if you really want to, like, be able to reach those lower registers, just, like, voice training, right? What you want to do is you want to, like, sing. You want to sing in that tone, right? In, like, key. So I was, like, I did, like, the vocal pitch stuff, right? And then I think, like, the lowest that my voice goes down to is, like, a C3. It's either a C3 or a D3. It might be D3, actually. I don't think about it, because C3 is kind of crazy. Yeah, no, D3, right? Watch me hit C3 in, like, 3 weeks, I bet you. No, just kidding. Anyway, so I was singing it, and then I was singing Just So You Know by Jesse McCartney, because that's an old-ass song, but that's actually a song that I was going to do a cover to. So I was singing it, and then I got really dumb singing it, and then I started singing it like how I thought Goofy would sing it. So I'm going to do that for you guys, because I think that's fucking hilarious, okay? Okay. I sure love you, but I want to. I just can't turn away. I shouldn't see you, but I can't move. I can't look away. And I shouldn't wait. And I don't know how to be fine when I'm not. Cause I don't. Okay, so this is like, you hear that sound right now? That's everyone instantly unsubscribing from my Patreon. No, but the chorus gets better. All right, just so you know, this feeling's taking control of me. I can't help it. I won't sit around. I can't let them win now. Thought you should know. I tried my best to let go. Okay, I'm going to stop doing that. Oh, God. I might have self-sabotaged myself. Okay, anyways, welcome to day two of a daily deep voice training. So the biography I'm reading today, it's weird. I'm reading biographies. It was picked by Wikipedia. You know, you go to wikipedia.org and then you go to featured article. And then today was Daniel Boone. Yes, he, the famous, or, you know, depending on who you ask, famous explorer. So let's go. Boone was born on October 22nd, 1734, the sixth of 11 children in a family of Quakers. Why do I have a southern accent? I don't fucking know. His family, Squire Boone. Are you kidding me? His name is actually Squire. That's crazy. Squire Boone immigrated to colonial Pennsylvania from the small town of Bradninch in the county of Devon, England, sometime around 1712. Squire, a weaver and blacksmith, kind of feel like he kind of missed his calling there with a name like Squire. Married Sarah Morgan, whose family were Quakers from Wales. 1731, the Boones built a one-room log cabin in the Ole Valley in what is now Berks County, Pennsylvania, near present Reading, where Daniel was born. The only Reading I know is the Reading Railroad. Oh, and the Reading Rainbow. Yeah. LeVar Burton, what a treasure. Right, so, the Reading, you know, it's like one of the four trains in the Monopoly. Horrible friendship ruining game. Okay. Boone spent his early years on the Pennsylvania frontier, often interacting with Lenape Indians. Boone learned to hunt from local settlers and Lenape Indians. By the age of 15, he had a reputation as one of the region's best hunters. You know what? If I'm going to sound like this when I'm doing, like, my... I fucking might as well just give up, because ain't no one going to be subscribing to a voice that sounds like this. By the age of 15, he had a reputation as one of the region's best hunters. Many stories about Boone emphasize his hunting skills. In one tale, the young Boone was hunting in the woods with some other boys when the howl of a panther scattered all but Boone. Calmly cocked his rifle and shot the panther through the heart just as it leaped at him. The story may be a folktale. Oh, it's definitely a folktale. One of many that became part of Boone's popular image. In Boone's youth, his family became a source of controversy in the local Quaker community. In 1742, Boone's parents were compelled to publicly apologize after their eldest daughter, Sarah, married a worldling, or non-Quaker, gasp, while she was visibly pregnant, gasp, gasp, when Boone's oldest brother, Israel, also married a worldling in 1747, Squire Boone stood by his son and was therefore expelled from the Quakers. This is my, Goofy era, goofy day? I don't fucking know, man. Although his wife continued to attend monthly meetings with her children. Wow, I did not know the Quakers were so intolerant. I would have thought that Quakers, I mean, aren't they known to be like the most tolerable, like tolerant, like religious organization? All right. Perhaps as a result of this controversy, in 1750, Squire sold his land and moved the family to North Carolina. Daniel Boone did not attend church again, although he always considered himself a Christian and had all his children baptized. Well, in that time, in that period, like, everyone was Christian, right? Like, it was kind of dangerous not to be. The Boones eventually settled on the Yadkin River in what is now Davie County, North Carolina, about 2 miles west of Mocksville. Boone received a little formal education, since he preferred to spend his time hunting, apparently with his parents' blessing. I mean, free food, right? According to a family tradition, when a school teacher expressed concern over Boone's education, Boone's father said, "Let the girls do the spelling and Dan will do the shooting." Hmm, great. Okay, cool. Boone was tutored by family members, though his spelling remained unorthodox. Historian John MacFarriger cautions that the folk image of Boone as semi-illiterate is misleading, arguing that Boone acquired a level of literacy that was equal to most men of his times. Boone regularly took reading material with him on his hunting expeditions. The Bible and Gulliver Travels were favorites. He was often the only literate person in groups of frontiersmen and would sometimes entertain his hunting companions by reading to them around the campfire. The French and Indian War broke out between the French and the British, along with their respective Indian allies, and Boone joined a North Carolina militia company as a teamster and blacksmith. In 1755, his unit accompanied General Edward Braddock's attempt to drive the French out of the Ohio country, which ended, I did not know Ohio was a country, which ended in disaster at the Battle of Monongahela. I'll link the Wikipedia so you can actually see it. Boone, in the rear with the wagons, took no part in the battle and fled with the retreating soldiers. How's that for a folk hero, huh? He returned home after the defeat and married Rebecca Bryan, a neighbor in the Yadkin Valley, on April 14, 1756. When was he born again? 1734? Oh, yeah, 1734. It was like 22. That was a pretty reasonable time. The couple initially lived in a cabin on his father's farm and eventually had 10 children. Wow. Boy, did they fuck. Sorry. Goddamn. In addition to raising 8 children of deceased relatives. Wow, that was very kind of them. In 1758, conflict erupted between British colonists and the Cherokees, their former allies in the French and Indian War. After the Yadkin Valley was raided by Cherokees, the Boones and many other families fled north to Culpeper County, Virginia. Boone saw action as a member of the North Carolina militia during this, quote, Cherokee uprising, periodically serving under Captain Hugh Waddell on the North Carolina frontier until 1760. Boone supported his growing family in these years as a market hunter and trapper, collecting pelts for the fur trade. Almost every autumn, despite the unrest on the frontier, he would go on long hunts, extended expeditions into the wilderness, lasting weeks or months. Wow, so he basically just left his wife to take care of 18 children. Sorry, who had the more difficult job? All right. Boone went alone or with a small group of men, accumulating hundreds of deer skins in the autumn and trapping beaver and otter over the winter. When the long hunters returned in the spring, they sold their take to commercial fur traders. On their journeys, frontiersmen often carved messages on trees or wrote their names on cave walls, and Boone's name or initials have been found in many places. A tree in Washington County, Tennessee reads, D. Boone. sealed a bar on tree in the year 1760. I think what they meant to say was D. Boone killed a bear in a tree in the year 1760. Again, I will link the Wikipedia article so you can read it for yourself because it is wild. Okay. A similar carving is preserved in the Museum of the Filson Historical Society in Louisville, Kentucky, which reads, D. Boone killed a bear. That guy really did not like the letter E, huh? 1803. What did the letter E ever do to you, man? The inscriptions may be genuine or part of a long tradition of phony Boone relics. According to a popular story, Boone returned home after a long absence to find that Rebecca had given birth to a daughter. Gasp! Rebecca confessed that she had thought that Daniel was dead and that his brother had fathered the child. Wow. Wild. Boone did not blame Rebecca and raised the girl as his own child. Wow! Even more wild. Boone's early biographers knew the story but did not publish it. Wow. Can you imagine? Like, you know, she thinks her husband is dead and then, like, there's his brother and, you know, she has needs, I guess, or he had needs. One of the two had needs and then, you know, bow chicka wow wow and then, you know, he comes back and then it's like, you ain't dead. Interesting. All right. Anyways, modern biographers regard the tale as possibly folklore, since the identity of the brother and the daughter vary in different versions of the tale. Okay, so it might not have been false. Okay, well. In the mid-1760s, Boone began to look for a new place to settle. The population was growing in the Yadkin Valley, which reduced the amount of game available for hunting. He had difficulty making ends meet and was often taken to court for non-payment of debts. He sold what land he owned to pay off creditors. After his father's death in 1765, Boone traveled with a group of men to Florida, which had become British territory after the end of the war, to look into possibility of settling there. According to the family story, he purchased land in Pensacola, but Rebecca refused to move so far away from friends and family. I bet that's a lie. She just did not want to move to Florida, because who would? Wow, even back then, no one wanted to go to Florida except for retirees. Okay. The Boones instead moved to a more remote area of the Yadkin Valley, and he began to hunt westward into the Blue Ridge Mountains. Years before entering Kentucky, Boone had heard about the region's fertile land and abundant game. In 1767, Boone and his brother Squire, his brother was named Squire too? Wow. Why isn't he Squire Jr.? What the fuck? All right, his brother Squire first crossed into what would become the state of Kentucky, but they failed to reach the rich farming lands. Okay, whatever. In May 1769, Boone set out again with a party of five others, including John Finley, who first told Boone of the Cumberland Gap on a two-year hunting and trapping expedition. You motherfucker were gone for 2 years and you thought your wife was going to wait that long with 18 children to take care of by herself? Fucking... wow, okay. His first sighting of the bluegrass region from atop Pillock Knob became an icon of American history and was the frequent subject of paintings. I gotta let my cat out. I'll be right back. If I'm lucky, she won't ask to be let back in, but she'll ask. Because I'm not that lucky. All right. I'll turn on the AC. All right. So, in December 22nd, 1769, Boone and fellow hunter John Stewart were captured by a party of Shawnee, who confiscated all of their skins and told them to leave and never return. The Shawnee had not signed the 1768 Treaty of Fort Stanwix, in which the Iroquois had ceded their claim to Kentucky to the British. Wow. The Shawnee were very tolerant. They could have just scalped him and walked away. No one would have known. Anyways, the Shawnee regarded Kentucky as their hunting ground. They considered American hunters there to be poachers. Boone, undeterred, continued hunting and exploring in Florida. Oh, so, okay, so he's just a fucking poacher. I see. On one occasion, he shot a man to avoid capture, which historian John MacFarriger says, quote, was one of the first Indians that Boone acknowledged killing. Fuck you, Boone. Boone returned to North Carolina in 1771, but came back to hunt in Kentucky in the autumn of 1772. Not gonna lie, I'm glad you're... Wait, hold on a second. Wait. This just now occurred to me. How many brothers did he have? Is it the brother Squire that knocked up his wife? Or was that another brother? Oh, man, this family, got along kind of well, didn't they? In 1773, I'm not letting you in, Kat. You chose to leave. No, I'm not letting you back. Boone packed up his family and with his brother Squire and a group of about 50 others began the first attempt by British colonists to establish a settlement. Boone was still an obscure figure at the time. The most prominent member of the expedition was William Russell, a well-known Virginian and future brother-in-law of Patrick Henry. Another member of this expedition was Boone's friend and fellow long hunter Michael Stoner. Included in this group were an unknown number of enslaved blacks, including Charles and Adam. No last name, I guess. On October 9th, Boone's oldest son, James, several whites. The word whites is capitalized, like the first letter, and whites is capitalized, so I guess some random other Caucasian people. And Charles and Adam left the main party to seek provisions in a nearby settlement. They were attacked by a group of Delawares, Shawnee and Cherokee. Following the Fort Stanwix Treaty, American Indians in the region had been debating what to do. What the fuck? Why are we calling them American Indians? Weren't we supposed to call them Native Americans? Following the Fort Stanwix Treaty, Native Americans in the region had been debating what to do about the influx of settlers. This group had decided, in the words of Farragher, quote, to send a message of their opposition to settlement, unquote. James Boone and William Russell's son, Henry, were tortured and killed. Oh, James is the... Okay. I thought James Boone and William Russell had a son, Henry. No, that's not the case. Okay. Charles was captured. Adam witnessed the horror concealed in riverbank driftwood. After wandering in the woods for 11 days, Adam located the group and informed Boone of the circumstance of their deaths. Charles' body was found by pioneers 40 miles from the abduction site, dead from a blow to the head. The brutality of the... What brutality? He got his head knocked in. How is that brutal? Brutal is like tying one limb to one tree, the other limb to another tree, and like bent in, and then just cutting, cutting the rope. I don't fucking know. You know, that to me was not brutal. Okay, was it only brutal because it was white people getting killed? Okay. The brutality of the killing sent shockwaves along the frontier, and Boone's party abandoned their expedition. Good. The attack was one of the first events in what became known as Dunmore's War, a struggle between Virginia and Native Americans for control of what is now West Virginia and Kentucky. In the summer of 1774, Boone traveled with a companion to Kentucky to notify surveyors there of the outbreak of war. I mean, is it war? They journeyed more than 800 miles in 2 months to warn those who had not already fled the region. Upon his return to Virginia, he found another daughter. I'm just kidding. No, he didn't. I mean, he might have, but it's not written in the article. Boone helped defend colonial settlements along the Clinch River, earning a promotion to captain of the militia, as well as acclaim from fellow citizens. After the brief war, which ended soon after Virginia's victory in the Battle of Point Pleasant in October 1774, the Shawnee relinquished their claims to Kentucky. Wow, this is a very uplifting biography. Following Dunmore's War, Richard Henderson, a prominent judge from North Carolina, helped Boone to help establish a colony to be called Transylvania. Okay. Boone traveled to several Cherokee towns and invited them to a meeting. Are you fucking kidding me? Okay, and invited to a meeting held at Sycamore Shoals in March 1775, where Henderson purchased the Cherokee claim to Kentucky. With what? Like, 3 necklaces of coral? Fuck. Boone then blazed Boone's Trace, later known as the Wilderness Road, through the Cumberland Gap and into central Kentucky. Sam, an enslaved black, quote, body servant, quote, and other enslaved laborers were among this group of settlers. When this group camped near the location of present-day Richmond, Kentucky, Indians attacked. Oh, God, Indians, really? Native Americans attacked, killing Sam and his owner. After driving off the attackers, the party buried the 2 men side by side. He founded Boonesboro. The ego of this guy. He founded Boonesboro along the Kentucky River. Other settlements, notably Harrodsburg, were also established at this time. Despite occasional Indian attacks, Boone brought his family and other settlers to Boonesboro on September 8th, 1775. This is a long-ass fucking article, and I wish I checked. American Indians who were unhappy about the loss of Kentucky by treaty saw the American Revolutionary War as a chance to drive out the colonists. You know what? It does occur to me, like, Boone was before the American Revolution. That's fucking crazy to me. I always thought that Boone was, like, post-Revolutionary War. I never thought he was pre. Okay. Okay, saw the American Revolutionary War as a chance to drive out the colonists. Isolated settlers and hunters became the frequent target of attacks, convincing many to abandon Kentucky. By late spring of 1776, Boone and his family were among the fewer than 200 colonists who remained, primarily at the fortified settlements of Boonesboro, Harrodsburg, and Logan Station. On July 14, 1776, Boone's daughter Jemima and 2 other girls were captured outside Boonesboro by an Indian war party who carried the girls north toward the Shawnee towns in the Ohio country. Boone and a group of men from Boonesboro set out in pursuit, finally catching up with them 2 days later. Boone and his men ambushed the Indians, rescuing the girls and driving off their captors. The incident became the most celebrated event of Boone's life. James Fenimore Cooper created a version of this episode in his classic novel, The Last of the Mohicans. In 1776, Henry Hamilton, British Lieutenant Governor of Quebec, began to recruit Native American war parties to raid the Kentucky settlements. That same year in March, the newly formed militia... God fucking damn it. I need some water. That same year in March, the newly formed militia of Kentucky County... Oh, yeah, you could hear the smoothness of my voice immediately. That same year in March, the newly formed militia of Kentucky County, Virginia, mustered in Boonesboro, whose population included 10 to 15 enslaved people. Why is that so important? Why does it keep getting pointed out? On April 24, 1778, the British allied Shawnee, led by Chief Blackfish, mounted the Siege of Boonesboro. Armed enslaved men fought alongside their owners at the fort's walls. I'm pretty sure they had no choice. After going beyond the fort walls to engage the attackers, London, one of the enslaved, was killed. This is getting very, very, like, down to the nitty-gritty, like... Okay, Boone was shot in the ankle while outside the fort. Amid a flurry of bullets, he was carried back inside by Simon Kenton, a recent arrival at Boonesboro. Kenton became Boone's close friend, as well as a legendary frontiersman in his own right. While Boone recovered, the Shawnee kept up their attacks outside Boonesboro, killing cattle and destroying crops. With food running low, the settlers needed salt to preserve what meat they had. So in January 1778, Boone led a party of 30 men to the Salt Springs on the Licking River. Probably because the wildlife there would lick the salt deposits. You know, salt licks? Yeah, okay. On February 7th, when Boone was hunting for meat for the expedition, he was captured by the Blackfish warriors. Because Boone's party was greatly outnumbered, Boone returned to camp the next day with Blackfish and persuaded his men to surrender rather than put up a fight. Is Boone, like, the most luckiest man in the world? I feel like he should have died, like, 10 times over. Okay. Blackfish intended to move on to Boonesboro and capture it, but Boone argued the women and children would not survive a winter trek as prisoners back to Shawnee villages. Instead, Boone promised that Boonesboro would surrender willingly the following spring. Boone did not have an opportunity to tell his men that he was bluffing to prevent an immediate attack on Boonesboro. Boone pursued this strategy so convincingly, some of his men concluded he had switched sides, an impression that led to his court-martial. Many of the Shawnee wanted to execute the prisoners in retaliation for the recent murder of Shawnee Chief Cornstalk by Virginia militiamen. Because Shawnee chiefs led by seeking consensus, Blackfish held a council. After an impassioned speech by Boone, the warriors voted to spare the prisoners. Although Boone had saved his men, Blackfish pointed out that Boone had not included himself in the agreement, so Boone was forced to run the gauntlet through the warriors, which he survived with minor injuries. Right. Boone and his men were taken to Blackfish's town of Chillicothe. I am very sorry, yeah, it's probably very wrong. As was their custom, the Shawnee adopted some of the prisoners to replace fallen warriors. Boone was adopted into a Shawnee family at Chillicothe, please don't make me say that again, perhaps into Blackfish's family, and given the name Sheltowee, Big Turtle. Okay. All right. In March 1778, the Shawnee took the unadopted prisoners to Governor Hamilton in Detroit. Blackfish brought Boone along, though he refused Hamilton's offers to release Boone to the British. Hamilton gave Boone gifts, attempting to win his loyalty, while Boone continued to pretend that he intended to surrender Boonesboro. Boone returned with Blackfish to, God fucking damn it, Chillicothe. God, what? Stop. On June 16, 1778, when he learned Blackfish was about to return to Boonesboro with a large force, Boone eluded his captors and raced home, covering the 160 miles to Boonesboro in 5 days on horseback. And after his horse gave out, the majority on foot. When he says, when the article says horse gave out, it's a euphemism. Basically, he ran his horse to death. The majority on foot. Biographer Robert Morgan calls Boone's escape and return, quote, one of the great legends of frontier history. Right. Upon Boone's return to Boonesboro, some of the men expressed doubts about Boone's loyalty, since he had apparently lived happily among the Shawnee for months. Boone responded by leading a preemptive strike against the Shawnee across the Ohio River. Oh my god. Then by helping to successfully defend Boonesboro against the 10-day siege led by Blackfish, who must have, by this point, felt fucking betrayed, which began on September 7th, 1778. After the siege, Captain Benjamin Logan and Colonel Richard Calloway, both of whom had nephews who were still captive, surrendered by Boone, brought charges against Boone for his recent activities. In the court-martial that followed, Boone was found not guilty and was even promoted after the court heard his testimony. Despite this vindication, Boone was humiliated by the court-martial, and he rarely spoke of it. That makes sense. Wow. That is... I mean, it's not that much, but... Actually, it is a lot. Okay. After the trial, Boone returned to North Carolina to take his family back to Kentucky. In the autumn of 1779, a large party of immigrants came with him, including the family of Captain Abraham Lincoln, grandfather of the future president. Wow. 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon, am I right? Rather than remain in Boonesboro, Boone founded the nearby settlement of Boone's Station. This guy was very, very full of himself. He began earning money by locating good land for other settlers. Transylvania land claims had been invalidated after Virginia created Kentucky County, so settlers needed to file new land claims with Virginia. In 1780, Boone collected about $20,000 in cash. That is a shit ton of money. From various settlers and traveled to Williamsburg to purchase their land. I'm going to look that up. $20,000 in 1780 to the USD in 1780 worth today. Holy shit, that's $500,000. Can you imagine carrying that much money? Wow. Can you imagine carrying $500,000 on you? Just, okay. All right. Where am I going? Right. Okay. While he was sleeping in a tavern. Oh, fuck. While he was sleeping in a tavern during the trip, the cash was stolen from his room. Fuck me. Oh, my God. I literally did not read any of this. I just started reading, so I have no idea what I'm, like, about to read until I actually start reading it. This is hilarious. Okay. Where am I? Okay. Some of the settlers forgave Boone the loss. Oh my God. Others insisted he repay the stolen money, which took him several years to do. What the fuck? Someone stole $500,000. What the fuck did they do with $500,000? Okay. In contrast to the later folk image of Boone as a backwoodsman who had little affinity for, quote, civilized society, Boone was a leading citizen of Kentucky at this time. When Kentucky was divided into three Virginia counties in November 1780, Boone was promoted to lieutenant colonel in the Fayette County militia. In April 1781, he was elected as a representative to the Virginia General Assembly, which was held in Richmond. In 1782, he was elected sheriff of Fayette County. I'm assuming it's Fayette, because, you know, like the French, unless it's like the same thing that they do in, like, Illinois, because Illinois has, like, they have a town there called, it's spelled Cairo, but they pronounce it Cairo. This is, like, south in Illinois. And then they have another city called, or town, they have another town or township or whatever called, it's spelled Versailles, like Versailles Palace in France, but they pronounce it Versailles. All right, okay, let's get back to this. Let's see. Meanwhile, the American Revolutionary War continued. Boone joined General George Roger Clark's invasion of the Ohio country in 1780, fighting the Battle of Pequot against the Shawnee on August 7th. On the way home from the campaign, Boone was hunting with his brother Ned when Shawnee shot and killed Ned, who resembled Daniel. The Shawnee beheaded Ned, believing him to be Daniel, and took the head as evidence that Daniel Boone had finally been slain. In 17, I wonder if that's the brother that knocked up his wife. Probably not that big of a loss then for him. All right. In 1781, Boone traveled to Richmond to take his seat in the legislature, but British dragoons under, never thought I'd see that name here. But British dragoons under Bannister Tarleton. Wow. I totally butchered that first name, by the way. I've only ever seen that name written. I've never heard anyone pronounce it. Have you guys seen The Patriot with Mel Gibson? Anyway, so the British guy, the one that, like, tortures Mel Gibson and, like, you know, does terrible things to, like, his son's, like, fiance, that guy was based on Tarleton. Tarleton? I gotta know how to pronounce that. Hold on a second. Bannister. There we go. How do I pronounce that? Pronunciation. Bannister Bonner. No, I want the English pronunciation. Bannister Tarleton? Oh, what the? Bannister Tarleton. Interesting. What's the British pronunciation? Bannister Tarleton. Oh, okay. So I was actually pretty close. Okay, that's cool. All right. I'm learning things. It's cool. All right. Bannister Tarleton captured Boone and several other legislators near Charlottesville. The British released Boone on parole several days later. during Boone's term, Cornwallis surrendered at Yorktown in October 1781, but the fighting continued in Kentucky. Boone returned to Kentucky and in August 1782 fought in the Battle of Blue Licks, a disastrous defeat for the Kentuckians in which Boone's son Israel was killed. In November 1782, Boone took part in another Clark-led expedition into Ohio, the last major campaign of the war. After the Revolutionary War ended, Boone this guy has had quite a life. After the Revolutionary War ended, Boone resettled in Limestone, later renamed Maysville, Kentucky, then a booming Ohio River port. He kept a tavern and worked as a surveyor, horse trader, and land speculator. In 1784, on Boone's 50th birthday, frontier historian John Filson published The Discovery, Settlement, and Present State of Kentucky. That guy obviously liked his E, as opposed to Boone, who didn't like the E at all. The popular book included a chronicle of Boone's adventures, which made Boone a celebrity. As settlers poured into Kentucky, the border war with Native Americans north of the Ohio River resumed. On September 1786, Boone took part in a military expedition into the Ohio country led by Benjamin Logan. Returning to Limestone, Boone housed and fed Shawnee, who had been captured during the raid, and helped... He housed and fed Shawnee, who had been captured during the raid, and helped to negotiate a truce. And did they not, like, kill his brother, and then his son, and then, like, his slave? Hold on a second. This guy is very, and then, like, they also got him, like, court-martialed. I mean, he was, you know, like, ruled not guilty, but he was still, like, humiliated over that. Yo, that's crazy. And then, like, they, like, kidnapped his wife, but somehow, wow, this guy does not hold a grudge. I guess I respect that. All right. Okay. Although the war would not end until the American victory at the Battle of Fallen Timbers 8 years later, the 1786 expedition was the last time Boone saw military action. I mean, that makes sense. He was like, what, 50, 60 at that point? 52. Yeah. Okay. Boone was initially prosperous. Oh, dear. Okay. Foreshadow. Boone was initially prosperous in Limestone, owning 7 slaves, a relatively large number for Kentucky at the time. In 1786, he purchased a Pennsylvania enslaved woman, age of about 20. Was he still married to his wife? Fuck it, I guess it doesn't even matter, right? I mean, for 90 pounds, current lawful sick. Money.
This
guy, a leader, obviously. He served as militia colonel, sheriff, and county coroner. What the fuck, county coroner, really? Okay, maybe coroner was different back then. In 1787, he was again elected to the Virginia State Assembly, this time from Bourbon County. He began to have financial troubles after engaging in land speculation, buying and selling claims to tens of thousands of acres. These ventures ultimately failed because of the chaotic nature of land speculation in frontier Kentucky. No shit. And Boone's poor business instincts. Hey, but at least he's got a 20-year-old, you know... God, this is really disturbing. Frustrated with the legal hassles that went with land speculation, in 1789, Boone moved upriver to Point Pleasant, Virginia. Which is now West Virginia. Yeah, Point Pleasant. Hey, Mothman. Mothman's from Point Pleasant, right? Yeah. Okay. There he I should do a Wikipedia reading on Mothman, too. There he operated a trading post and occasionally worked as a surveyor's assistant. Wow. How the turntables. He was a surveyor and now he's an assistant. That must really chafe his buttocks. That same year, when Virginia created Kanawha County, Boone became the lieutenant colonel of the county militia. In 1791, he was elected to the Virginia legislature for the third time. He contracted to provide supplies for the Kanawha militia, but his debts prevented him from buying goods on credit, so he closed his store and returned to hunting and trapping, though he was often hampered by rheumatism. In 1795, Boone and his wife... Oh, okay. So he was married. Okay, still. Boone and his wife moved back to Kentucky, living on land owned by their son, Daniel Morgan Boone, in what became Nicholas County. The next year, Boone applied to Isaac Shelby, the first governor of the new state of Kentucky, for a contract to widen the Wilderness Road into a wagon route, but the contract was awarded to someone else. Meanwhile, lawsuits over conflicting land claims continued to make their way through the Kentucky courts. Boone's remaining land claims were sold off to pay legal fees and taxes, but he no longer paid attention to the process. In 1798, a warrant was issued for Boone's arrest after he ignored a summons to testify in a court case, although the sheriff never found him. That same year, the Kentucky Assembly named Boone County in his honor. Wow, what a guy. Get arrested. He still names shit after you. That's amazing. Having endured legal and financial setbacks, Boone sought to make a fresh start by leaving the United States. Fresh start? Bruh, you're like 60. In 1799, good for him, I guess. I mean, you know. In 1799, he moved his extended family to what is now St. Charles County, Missouri, but was then part of the Spanish Louisiana. The Spanish, eager to promote settlement in the sparsely populated region, did not enforce the official requirement that all immigrants be Catholic. The Spanish governor appointed Boone syndic, judge and jury, and commandant. Military leader of the Femme Osage District. I know I spelled that wrong. I'm very sorry. I think it's Osage. Osage. I feel like I should know that, so I'm going to look that up. Osage pronunciation. There we go. Osage. Really? Is it as easy as that? Osage? Wait, hold on a second. Osage. But why is it spelled like Osage? Okay. All right. Anecdotes of Boone's tenure as syndic suggest he sought to render fair judgment rather than strictly observe the letter of the law. Okay. I mean, kind of expected it. You know, he was very nice to the Shawnee, even though they killed a lot of his people, or people close to him, and also he probably killed a lot of people close to them, too, so. Boone served as syndic and commandant until 1804, when Missouri became part of the United States following the Louisiana Purchase. He was appointed captain of the local militia. I'm going to drink some more water. This is how you know he lived a long, full life, because I'm still fucking reading 40 minutes later. Because Boone's land grants from the Spanish government had been largely based on oral agreements. He again lost his land claims. Yeah, I should have gotten that in writing, buddy. In 1809, he petitioned Congress to restore his Spanish land claims, which was finally done in 1814. He then sold most of his land to repay old Kentucky debts. Wow. Okay. When the War of 1812 came to Missouri, Boone's son, Daniel Morgan Boone, and Nathan Boone took part. But by that time, Boone was much too old for militia duty. Yeah, he was like 70 years old by then. Although Boone reportedly vowed never to return to Kentucky after moving to Missouri, stories, possibly folk tales, were told of him making one last visit to Kentucky to pay off his creditors. Excuse me. American painter John James Audubon claimed to have gone hunting with Boone in Kentucky around 1810. Years later, Audubon painted a portrait of Boone, supposedly from memory, although skeptics noted the similarities of his painting to the well-known portraits of Chester Harding. Some historians believe Boone visited his brother, Squire, near Kentucky. How is Squire still alive? That's surprising. Near Kentucky in 1810 and have accepted the veracity of Audubon's accounts. Boone spent his final years in Missouri, often in the company of children and grandchildren. He continued to hunt and trap as much as his health and energy levels permitted, intruding upon the territory of the Osage tribe, who once captured him and confiscated his furs. In 1810, at the age of 76, he went with a group on a six-month hunt up the Missouri River, reportedly, wow, this guy really got around, didn't he? Reportedly as far as the Yellowstone River, a round trip of more than 2,000 miles. He began one of his final trapping expeditions in 1815 in the company of a Shawnee and Derry Coburn, a slave who was frequently with Boone in his final years. They reached Fort Osage in 1816, where an officer wrote, "We have been honored by a visit from Colonel Boone. He has taken place in all the wars of America, from Braddock's War to the present hour. But, quote, he prefers the woods where you see him in the dress of the roughest, poorest hunters. And that is it for me today. I am going to go and get some sleep because it is now 11:45. All right, bye.